And we're live with our 303rd episode of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host, Seth Law, at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to a very special episode. As we have been promoting, we've got Professor Glass, Brian Glass, on with us today to talk about the OWASP Top 10 2025. RC1, right? Like the release candidate one. I don't know how settled it is, but we're going to get into that. Brian, welcome back to the show. Excited to have you and your insights with us.
Thank you.
Before we dive into the OWASP Top 10, because there's going to be a lot to talk about, we'll see how much we get through. I did want to give a shout out quickly that we will be doing a Harnessing LLMs for Application Security course next week. It's the end of next week. It's virtual. If you haven't had an opportunity to dig into LLMs yet, how to utilize them, script them, interact with them, this will be your opportunity to do it in a way that Ken and I are using on a daily basis. So there is that opportunity available. In addition, the Black Hat Europe course is selling out. That is the beginning of December. That is a four-day intensive that combines both secure code review with LLMs and also the dynamic portion and everything else that we do with LLMs, specifically made for Black Hat. And that is selling out as well. So please register for both of those opportunities if you are interested. If you have any questions, hit Ken and I up in Slack. Right, Ken or me, hit Ken, yeah, whatever, right? Or DM us. We're pretty much online all the time. And I'm pretty sure you can find one of us at some point. Cool. I don't want to belabor those points. Kenny, anything else before we dig into the OWASP Top 10?
No. We are here for Brian and the OWASP Top 10. So
okay. All right.
Get started.
Yes. So I'm going to post the link really quick. I guess this is just the introduction to the OWASP Top 10 on OWASP.org. This was released last Thursday. I know we've been talking about it for a while. But before we dig into the actual list itself, Brian, tell us a little bit about how that went last week, what the reception was like, and then we'll start talking about the individual items in there.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it's been, we call it RC1. There won't be an RC2. There's not enough time in the year. I mean, it's one of those where we try to have as transparent of a process as we can. We try to make sure that we take feedback. And some of that was, you know, born over time. You know, this is the eighth iteration. We're at like 22 years on this project. I've been part of it since late 2016 for the 2017 and then 21 and now 25. And it's, I mean, the top 10 is the top 10, like it's set right now. But there's also, because it's an awareness document, there's so much more that we want to make sure is accurate and relevant and current. And within the core team, there, you know, we have a good bit of experience with, good bit. We average like 20 some years per core team member. So like there's a crazy amount of AppSec experience on the core team. And we're quite diverse in so many ways. It's actually quite fun to work with them all. But we don't know everything. So whatever people can contribute and go look through and submit PRs in GitHub and say, hey, I have a really cool example. I think it would be great in the top 10. By all means, bring that on. And that's why we name it a release candidate, because we wanted people to be able to review and be, oh, well, you shouldn't do that anymore. Or there's this recent research over here or something, because we can't possibly spend enough time to figure it all out. But the release on Thursday was great. I mean, we had every chair in the room was full, it was standing room only. And Neil and Tanya did the primary presenting. I was already presenting at SAM Day on Wednesday, and then the making of the top 10 on Friday. So then I like helped answer questions and participated in the reveal on Thursday, and then also another SAM talk on Friday. And so like I had all sorts of stuff to do.
Yeah, what was your workshop on? It was like 11:30, I think, in the morning. It was a workshop, yeah. though, right? Was that for Sam or was that for the top 10?
On Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah, on Friday, that was the top 10. That was the making of the top 10. I was walking through the methodology, different things we learned, some kind of unique stuff, things we can do better, what it can and can't tell us. So for me, what's fascinating is digging through the data and the survey and everything, and then figuring out what do we not know? What can it not tell us as much as what it can tell us? And so it's just fascinating to me. I love digging through data to find stories because all of the data out there has stories behind it. There's people who have a story to tell. The trick is finding it.
Yeah.
Interrupt.
No, you're fine, right? Like I always go back to looking at the contributors, like the main contributors that are giving, you know, data back to the OWASP top 10. Sometimes I feel like there are definite like deficiencies because you have to base your data or the top 10 on the data that you have, right? Like as is appropriate. And I know there's always that cry for, please give us your data. Please give us your data, like as much as possible so that it's valid. Or it's at least relevant to your community. Because if you don't have the tool vendors sharing it, if you don't have consultants sharing, you don't get that specific story that needs to be told, which means it won't be as relevant when it goes out to other consultants and other tool developers or, you know, and that's kind of what I always struggle with when I look at that is, okay, so what are we missing? And that was kind of my question to you. Like you've talked about it a little bit, like that, hey, there are definitely like the stories that you aren't seeing in there. Like, where do you feel like your biggest gap is? Or the OWASP top 10's not your biggest gap, but right, like, you know,
yeah.
When you look at that data.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting challenge. So in the data collection, I'm going to switch between data and data, depending on whatever my brain thinks is the right pronunciation at the time. It just happens. But it's interesting because I want data from large tool vendors. I want data from boutique pen test shops. I want data from bug bounty shops. And like the spectrum, because each of them has different perspectives. And so for me to be able to say, hey, we have a representative sample. We need representation from multiple different places. And also, I want to, you know, I want to say thank you for everyone who's willing to do it. For some of them, I know it's a big challenge because it's honestly, I wish more would do it, but not everybody like maps their findings to CWEs. And so it's harder later when I come and ask for data. It's like, hey, I need data, but I need it associated with CWEs. For some people, they spend hours working through, okay, so these will map to the CWD, these will map to these CWEs. CWEs aren't perfect. There's a lot of strange ones. There's a lot of CWEs that are almost duplicates of each other. Like there's a dozen path traversal CWEs. I was like, okay, great. Some of them are hyper-specific and some are hyper-general. And then we got CWEs that are essentially categories or like they roll up. There's a hierarchy of CWEs, right? And they'll say specifically, do not associate with these CWEs because you're cheating. Like it's in the 300s, cryptographic issues, which is essentially like a collection of all the other cryptographic CWEs. And it says, this is prohibited for mapping. And I get them mapped. I'm like, okay, I don't, you know, yes, it's cryptographic, but there's, you know, we're losing so much detail. And that's also part of the reason why when we do the top 10, I changed it from frequency to incidence rate, right? Mm-hmm. Because to get a representative sample, I need it from all of these different areas. Well, if it was frequency, the tool vendors absolutely dominate. Because remember, if you're finding cross-site scripting in an application, and it's a pen tester or a person doing it, they're not going to find all 5,000 instances of cross-site scripting in the application. They'll find three and they'll list one and say, you have a pervasive systemic problem. And that's great. That's a good use of their time. Tools couldn't care less, right? So they're like, well, we will find all 5,000 and justify our high cost in existence, and congratulations. So how do you reconcile those two, right? So that's why I do incidence rate, which is weird for people because they're so, the whole industry is so tuned to frequency. Mm-hmm. And so when you ask someone, because I only ask for four pieces of data at a core level. I need to know what year you were testing. I need to know what CWE you were testing for. How many applications did you find at least one instance? And then what was your population you tested? That's all I need. But it's a hard thing because people don't store data. They don't store data that way from their findings. So I'll still get stuff even with that where they will be like, well, we tested 10,000 applications in this year and we found SQL injection in 12,000 of them. I'm like, that's, I mean, I'm not the best math whiz, but that's not mathing. And so I'll have to go back and be like, I'm pretty sure this is not right. Frequency snuck in here somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I need unique. And that's the other challenge, right? So in a lot of systems, people struggle to be able to tell me which were unique applications. So as we get into this continuous testing cycle, the same apps get tested over and over and over. And so I'm not looking for counts of tests, but I'm looking for how many unique code bases, how many unique applications you were testing. And then, you know, the separate findings, like if I found it and then I find it again, was it a retest or is it the initial test? And that's a challenge sometimes. And then the biggest one I ran into in this scenario, and it's been coming, I knew it was coming, but define an application. So like, for instance, SemGrep contributed data. They do it by repo, not by application. Yeah. So like, how do you get an app count out of that? So it could be.
Yeah, there might be mono repos too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no, you know, what's the consistency? Is it 1-to-1, 5-to-1, 10-to-1, 1-to-10? I mean, like, you could have multiple apps on a single repo. I've seen it. It's not as common. But you could also have 10 repos to an app. And then if you have a Lambda, is that an app or a microservice? You know, so yeah, this is something, and I talked about it in the making of talk on Friday, is like, it's not really an identity crisis, but we're going to have to resolve how to do this, because in another 4 years, it'll keep shifting away from monoliths. Unless something amazing happens and it goes back, I've seen it fluctuate a little bit, but. So it's really interesting. I think we have a reasonable representative sample, but it's still, I don't know, it's a challenge, right? So what we test for at scale is usually not the harder things. Right? They're the things that we can write test cases for and be able to automate.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, well, there are a lot of things both inside and outside the CWE that not people, but tools, at least these some of these are SaaS, I think. Mm-hmm. That there's only a certain limited set of categories of things, they can look for, which tend to map to this top 10 in previous iterations for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we have SAS tools, DAS tools, IaaS tools. We have bug bounty. We have pen testing. We have repo scanning. We got Orca in there this time. That was awesome. So now we have container scanning. Like, we have a really broad swath, which That's is awesome. Also probably why we ended up with 686 unique CWEs in this set.
Mm-hmm.
And there's technically only 968 that should be mapped. Like, if you download the dictionary, there's more than that that have always been issued. I think the upper CWEs are at like 1500 or 1700 in terms of the numbers, but some of them get retired and some of them you're not supposed to map against. So if you download the dictionary, it's like 680 or 968 or so, that you should map against. But this is huge because in 2017, So the top 10, it used to be before 27 or in, up to 2017, the CWEs that we used for the top 10 were pre-scripted. We said, send us data on these 30 or fewer. Like, that's what we were up to. And then we decided, you know, that's artificially constraining our perspective and our view on things, right? So if you didn't assign something to one of those 30, we'd have no idea you tested for it. So in 21, I changed it and said, hey, just send me what you test for. It's not a prescript. Just send me everything you can actually map. And in 21, we had 390 CWEs that were unique. And in 25, we have 686.
That's awesome.
And it's a huge breadth.
Do they do any, do you know if they do any sort of validation on these findings? Like, you know, are they sending out raw statistics, or are these like validated, whether it's STAST or IAST or SAST or whatever, like specifically tooling companies?
So generally I have to take their word for it because I'm not auditing them. So it's attestation.
Sure. Yeah.
Most of them tell me that, you know, they'll tell me that it's validated. Some of them, they don't know, or they can't vouch for whether it's validated or not. And so it's always with a grain of salt, right, with all of these that I take, because I don't have, so given more time and like being able to do that, I'd love to have a heavier process on the data analysis, data collection, to where like go through interviews, sit down and to have multiple discussions with teams. And I'd love to get to that point, but right now it takes 18 months or so to get enough collected. I have enough trouble getting people to give me the time of day and what they can. So at the end of the day, beggars can't be choosers and some of that. But I also, even the anonymous ones, and we had this question on Friday, somebody was like, can people just send you anonymous data? Like, could you taint it and just get whatever? And I had to assure them, I was like, no, I don't have any purely anonymous data. Like, I know who contributed everything, but also we have the option that says, hey, we will anonymize your data. So one of the first things I do is I decouple the data with who sent it. So I have a different machine that I maintain, hey, this is the contributor that gave this particular data set. But on my main machine where I do all the processing and analysis, the names aren't there. Like, so they aren't matched. So that way I can say, hey, I know these came from here. These are anonymous. I know where they came from. I've had, you know, at least email exchanges, if not conversations with everybody who's contributed. So like they're not raw anonymous.
No, yeah, I wasn't sure actually. I just asked because I wasn't even sure if they even brought that up or if you all have ever had any conversations around it or anything like that. Not that I would know if that would skew things one way or the other. I just was curious more so than anything.
It would, but it doesn't skew incidence rate as much as it would frequency.
Oh, right. Okay. That does make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frequency, you might have four thousand instances of XSS, and if even 3 out of those 4,000 were valid, which is very likely, then you have an incident. Yeah. So, yeah, that makes total sense.
Then it's one. Yeah. So I'm not quite as worried as I would be if I was doing frequency, because when you look at, I mean, SAS traditionally is at an 80% false positive rate. Maybe it's lower. Maybe it's not. I get funny head shakes whenever I bring it up. So I have a feeling that if it's lower, people don't believe it. But it's still like, it's relatively small percentage of an impact when I look at incidence rate, even with that level of false positive. It will impact frequency for sure. Like, your frequency is way off, but that's why I don't like frequency. And I brought that up too for like, if I did it based on frequency, my list would be very similar to MITRE's top 25. Because if you look at the CVE distributions of which CWEs have like the highest CVEs, the list is very similar to the MITRE top 25. Now they have a formula. They weighed in like some KeV scoring, like exploitation and that kind of stuff. So it's not a pure one-to-one like the most, but cross-site scripting is still quite high on that list because it is by far the most CVEs in the system. It has over 30,000 of them. And for me, like, it takes me, gives me great joy, and maybe not in a good way, but that that cross-site scripting is no longer number one.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of injection, and injection's down to five. And this is awesome. Yeah. This is where it should go. This is a good direction.
It is injection. Like, it's content injection. We call it cross-site scripting, but I'm with you. It's content injection. Love it. Mm-hmm. Love that change. It's awesome.
Well, like from 21 to 25, like SSRF, we brought it in on the survey in 21, and it was the only category of the single CWE. It was weird, but it made sense. It needed attention. It was a very nasty, pervasive issue that there was very little weight to be able to say, oh, we have to fix this. And so now SSRF is folded into broken access control where it belongs. And that's why we have mishandling of exceptional conditions now. But also a ton of progress was made on finding, testing, and fixing and preventing SSRF in the last 4 years. And that's, like, for me, one of the chief purposes of the top 10 is to pull something, find things that we need to address and then bring attention to it and bring weight to it. Because the top 10 has ridiculous weight. And it's not like, it's not because I bestowed the weight on it. Everyone else has bestowed the weight on it. It's crazy. Like in the survey, like 85 of the 200 respondents said, oh, it's part of some compliance, some rule that we have to adhere to. And that was like, you know, 80 out of like 250. It was crazy. Like a third of them said, we have to do it. So yeah, that's why, I mean, like, insecure design showed up in 21 at number four, because it's something that we found data for and we know, like, absolutely needs to be addressed. And I've been watching this renaissance of threat modeling and design review and secure design principles and all of that in the last 4 years, and it's awesome. You know, that's the kind of thing that keeps me going.
You brought up at the beginning that this is an awareness document. I almost stopped you right then and there and was like, okay, the official, you know, kind of project lead person is saying it's an awareness doc. We say that. I think we, as in Seth and I, definitely say it. I think a lot of people say that. But I also hear a lot of what you're saying, where there's still so much confusion on what is this document. It's a compliance framework. It's a way to attest to that your tooling and your training and your processes are dialed into these specific OWASP top 10 categories of things. You hear all kinds of variations of it. So just to say it out loud, this is an awareness document that Brian believes should do X. What is the end goal, do you feel, Brian, for this goal, for this document around, like, is it just to sort of say, hey, these are the things that are very, very prevalent and happening, and so that you should do X? Or what are your thoughts here on what outcome should happen when awareness is brought from this document? I don't know if that's
I know what you mean. So the top 10 is fascinating to me because after 22 years, it's not replaced with something.
Mm-mm.
Like, how is it still have this much weight after 22 years, right? So started in 2003, you know, right around David Letterman's top 10, all the things, like that was a super common popular thing to do, right? So we have the top 10. And from my perspective, the top 10, my goal with the top 10, and generally I think the team's on board with this because we disagree about a lot of different things because we have a wide breadth of experiences and diverse understandings of things. But what we want to do with the top 10 is we're trying to raise the baseline of secure development across the industry. So that's why, like, things are structured the way they are. And I've gotten questions like, why don't you just do 10 CWEs? I'm like, because that would be almost useless. Yippee skip. I have 10 CWEs out of 1,000 of them. Like, that's not even, like, nobody's going to take that seriously at that point. Like, And then what do you do with languages that solve five of the 10? You know, like the training, and we've had this discussion before about like, that's why we have categories of CWEs, because also CWEs start bordering on academic, and a lot of industry level people like, and I talked about this on Friday, the CWE title and the CWE description don't match. Like, the title might say something. If you read the description, that's not really what it means, but that's the title it was given. And then some of the descriptions on CWEs, because some of them are root cause, some of them are symptom, some of them are high level, some of them are granular, like they vary like crazy. And so people get used to more, we kind of normalize nomenclature in the industry. Like, we have injection types of attacks, and we have broken access control or authorization issues, which are basically the same thing. And then you have authentication related issues, right? And so, because like also in the CWEs, I get 216, like almost a third of the CWEs, only one contributor reported. Nobody else mapped to that CWE. And so, like, it's CWEs super broad.
So just understand this. One contributor out of the many contributors, they're the only one to have submitted for this CWE category, and they had 200 instances. Did I hear that right?
No, it's not a single contributor. It's a single contributor in terms of 216 of the CWEs that were in the data, only one contributor reported on. So almost all of the contributors have some CWEs that they map to that nobody else maps to.
Okay.
So you're saying there's CWE bias per contributor, right?
Yeah. Somebody, some researcher, some developer, some security engineer, some analyst went through the list and said, I think this one matches. Now, there's so many layers that go on for mapping these things before they get to me. So I can't judge how anybody does those things. But like, and another 161 have two contributors that have said they have found that CWE. Like, it's insane. The vast majority of them have overlapping CWE bubbles. Like, if I drew a Venn diagram of this, which I'm tempted to do when I have the time, which, you know, maybe 5-10 years down the road, who knows? The overlap is so minimal. There is only one CWE that all 14 in the data set reported on. And you can probably guess which one that is.
Cross-site scripting?
Yep. CWE 79 is the only one that's present in everybody's data set. Mm-hmm. But then it goes down. Like, there's only one that 12 of them did. There's only three that 11 contributed. There's 15 that 10 of them contributed. Like, there's a very small set of CWEs that they all generally agree upon represent certain types of vulnerabilities. But outside of that small bucket, like, it's all over the place. And so that's a large part of the reason why we went to categories of CWEs. Now, I artificially cap them when I'm doing the data analysis at 40. More than 40 CWEs in a category is just too much, in my opinion. And so there are CWEs that are in the data that are part of a category but aren't in the top 10 because there were so few occurrences of those CWEs, and they would have broke over, they would have pushed us over 40 CWEs in that category. So it's not like everything in the kitchen sink dumped in there. But I've tried to make sure like there was a reasonable representation of those CWEs in the data set for it to be in that category.
Okay.
So what I'm hearing is that you want to also can take over and lead the CWE naming and definition.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what's that like. So I've had people complain. They're like, why do you do CWEs? It's not that great. I was like, point me to a better standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I mean, sure. I would love to have a 100% accurate standard, and I don't think we can, because software development, software security is too complex for that. And we get people complaining, this CWE should be in this category. I'm like, sure, on Tuesday, it probably was. I mean, and that's, like we go through, the team goes through weeks or months of shuffling them around going, I think reading the description, this really should be broken access control. Well, actually that's the root cause of this is a cryptographic failure. So it really should be over there. And at some point we have to stop because we run out of time, but I can move these CWEs between categories between Tuesday and Friday because I have a different perspective on something I may have encountered or an interpretation of a description.
Well, so to that point, right? Like we struggle from a practitioner perspective classifying under any system that same sort of, any vulnerability or flaw that we find because it's like, oh, is the root cause of this insecure design because they didn't actually build security requirements, or is it a cryptographic failure, or they just didn't, they didn't implement it properly? Is it broken access control, right? Like it's very easy to shift based on what we're seeing and what we're, the flaw in and of itself. Yeah.
Well, and some of them legitimately can be multiple CWEs. It's not an exclusive thing where there is one and only one. There can be only one. Root cause for something. It may be a collection.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, honestly, like that's what I see in our reports that we generate and other reports that I see from other vendors is this could be cryptographic failure, but it's also broken access control. And it's also maybe insecure design. So here's three different references that you're going to have to use on top of maybe one or two CWEs because that's how our tool classified it, right? Like that sort of thing. And at some point, it's almost like too much data. Like I'm trying to whittle it down to what's going to help the developer most here, right?
Yep.
So something like insecure design, if they're tactically trying to solve some flaw or some code, I'm probably not going to recommend insecure design. I'm going to, that's going to be a broader discussion. Whereas, okay, broken access control, we're going to talk about, and access to a specific object. All right, that's probably got better recommendations that are in there. But that's my view into the OWASP Top 10, as opposed to somebody that's trying to build a program or something else might classify it in a different way. So.
Yep. And that plays heavily into what we put in the Top 10 too, because we're trying to make sure that it's beneficial, right? So, and this is something I talk about at times, because of the level, the weight, the gravitas, the whatever word you want to put around the top 10, it drives directions of the industry. Like, and again, like I think it's funny that it does, but at the same time, if they're going to give us the platform, then we're going to use the platform to try and benefit the industry. And that's one of the unique places we're in because we're in OWASP. We don't really get to benefit from it. I'm not a particular vendor that sells a product that does anything. I get to be an academic. So I'm the neutral of neutrals I can be. And so I can go, the only downside is I don't get paid for it. I still got to figure that out. But I can be like, GitHub funding. Yeah. If anyone wants to contribute to help fund it, I've mistakenly calculated.
You can be bribed? Is that the takeaway from today's episode?
That's why I don't make any money. I can't be bribed.
Dang it. I was going to send you some apps. And here we are. Now I find you won't take bribes. Great.
I made the mistake of calculating how much time I've spent on the top 10, like the cost if it was consulting. And that was kind of depressing. So from our perspective, we want to improve the industry. My goal is one day that things can fall off this list because we don't have to deal with them anymore. That would be phenomenal. And so like when we were looking at, software supply chain failures, that was ridiculously huge to add because we looked at it and we had, when we first put on in 2017 and we had vulnerable components, people are like, you can't really test for that. Like, why is that here? That's weird. Like a developer writing code doesn't deal with that. And people are like, well, all the other top 10 fits into that because that's somebody else's problem that you inherited. And I was like, yes, but it's a problem because you keep using other people's code. It's not free. It's not like this magical mystical, wonderful thing that like some wizard wrote for you, right? You take on liability and risk for doing it. And then in 21, it became vulnerable and outdated components because it wasn't just vulnerable, but you had more risk from being outdated and that potential vulnerabilities. And then this time around, we looked at it and we're like, we're not getting it yet. Like, there's an entire ecosystem here that needs to be addressed. Like, we've sold out for, we do all these other things that are great risk management. And then we have this massive amount of debt and risk for taking vulnerable stuff. But also, we have a tendency to not well manage our CI/CD pipelines or all of the risks for that. We're like, oh, sure, nobody will mess with it. It's not the published application. But with the cloud-based levels of pipelines now, they're exposed. Whether or not you think they are, most of them have endpoints and connectors and attack surfaces. And so we put it in the survey, and I was like, I'm pretty sure that'll be up there. And we've never had an item so strongly number one top risk that we wouldn't have data for. And they were right. Like, the data for any CWEs related to software supply chain failures would have barely put it in the top 10, if at all. But we know better. And this is why we don't do it raw data. This is why the survey exists, is because if it was purely raw data, we would be putting only things in the top 10 that we were worried about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of these things... One. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, this is something I actually didn't know. I thought it was purely based off of that. I didn't realize. Yeah. So you said as much that it, there's, that's interesting. And I, for what it's worth, like, just want to say, I totally support that, because the way that software is developed now, there are just so many different parts of the stack and, you know, that you'd call supply chain, and so many places that it can go wrong. And to your point earlier about, like, poor hygiene. I mean, Seth, you consult all over the place. I'm sure you see that all the time, where there's just like, just minimal controls, minimal visibility.
And I specifically wanted to call that out, like, as like from a software supply chain, like vulnerable outdated components, we see that in pretty much every application that we test, right? Like, and so in the survey, that was one of the things I was calling out. But that goes hand in hand with like security misconfiguration in there as well. The fact that that has increased as, you know, or the it's higher in the list also speaks exactly to what I'm seeing, is these use of frameworks, the use of the underlying architecture, the cloud, whatever it is, WAF, right? Like, there's so many flaws that I find in dynamic applications from a security misconfiguration perspective that the developers have, at this point, some level of control over, right? Like, whether that's DevOps, DevSecOps, whether they're actually pushing configurations out, Terraform, what have you, and they do it incorrectly, that it's becoming a larger issue. And that, so, like, kudos to the team for actually recognizing that and putting that up higher on the list, because this is going to give that gravitas to me specifically. Like, I'm being selfish here. When I talk to developers and I talk to organizations, mm-hmm. like, hey, this is number two in the OWASP top 10, because we're seeing that, and it is having significant, or it's introducing significant risk to your application mm-hmm. and to your organization.
As we normalize on the common platforms, then, because it used to be 20 years ago, right? Configuration, you have change control for your app. You change code, you go through full change control. You change configuration, go ahead, do that. You can't change a whole lot with it. 20 years later, now, like, the entire app can almost completely change based on configurations, not on source code. We keep extracting more and more from the source code and putting it into a configuration so we can make it more dynamic. We can make it easier to change. We can make it more flexible and more generalized. And there's risks with that. And it's not like it's a bad thing per se, but not doing it well is a bad thing.
Yep.
And so we see it more and more as you go to these normalized frameworks and standardization that, the configuration is a big deal.
Yeah. Well, okay. So with that, right? Like, okay, so the software supply chain failures is new. mishandling of exceptional conditions, right? Like, so exceptions, that one's the other new one. I wanted to talk a little bit about that, and then I wanted to talk about what's missing or what people are complaining about. But let's talk about exceptional conditions, right? Like, where that one came from. I know, like, yeah. I don't have it up on the screen right now, but there is a discussion on it. How did this one come about? And then, like, with logging failures, alerting failures, right? Mm-hmm. Like, some of that is, there's a little bit of crossover there, but why the mishandling?
So it was interesting. So we created multiple categories when we tried grouping CWEs, and we tried to do them logical groupings. And one was code quality issues, right? Okay. So, and that shows up in CWEs, that shows up in different areas. We assign it to a code quality issue. Basically, you wrote cruddy code. And we, as a team, we were talking about this, and we're like, that's not actually super useful in terms of, like, having a top 10 category that said you wrote crappy code. You know, because what are you going to do? Tell them write better code? I mean, that's not like, this. It's so generic that you just don't have good quality control on your code. That we decided that wasn't a useful category for a top 10 because it wouldn't help. So we broke up the code quality group and said, all right, let's work harder and figure out of the things in that group, where can they go? And one of the things that came out of this was getting into, instead of, we had a category that was always below the top 10 that was basically exception handling failures or something around exception handling. And we have one that was denial of service. And then we decided, well, denial of service doesn't well represent what was in it. The lack of application resilience fit better. Like, denial of service is more of the end, like not the root cause, but what happens when you don't have resilience. And so we're like, okay, lack of application resilience makes more sense than denial of service. But then we started looking at exceptional conditions, and really that, we went beyond just raw, like, you screw up your error messages, you fail open kind of stuff. And we said, you know what? There are multiple types of exceptional conditions. Might be a logic flaw, might be an assumption you made. It might be you failed to put a try catch in somewhere. It may be that your error message coughs up sensitive data. Like, there's a number of things that fit in the mishandling of exceptional conditions. And then based on both data and survey, put mishandling of exceptional conditions and lack of application resilience into a dead heat with each other. So we toyed with, should we have 11? Should we have a tie for 10? Like, what can we finagle the system to fit them both? And then through a bunch of discussion, we're really come to, like, which of the two do we think would improve things more? Mm-hmm. And really, we felt that if we had mishandling of exceptional conditions, you could address some similar things. It would be a superset. It would overlap a little bit with lack of application resilience.
Yeah.
Because some of that, some of the exceptional conditions actually contributes to lack of resilience, but not so much the other way. And so if you were trying to address just resilience, you would miss a lot of exceptional conditions, the ones that didn't relate to resilience. And so that's, you know, through lots of discussion and such, we decided exceptional conditions made more sense. Logging and alerting failures is fascinating to me, because when we first put that in there, I got a lot of pushback. I was like, what the heck? These aren't vulnerabilities. You know, this is, you can't be compromised through them. Like, this is junk. But the data, like, yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm just telling you, I hear all sorts of stuff.
I know. I'm trying to. Sorry, I'll shut up.
Go ahead.
So, you know, and that's not usually tested for, because that's a really hard thing to test for. Insufficient logging. How do I know what's sufficient logging? Right. And that varies per application, that varies for systems. And so we're looking at that, and we're like, okay, so that's why that's been put in the top 10 by the survey results every time, mm-hmm. because it's hard to test for, but people know it's a problem. And so they're like, yeah, this has to be in the top 10. We have to get better at logging and alerting, because it's critical. Like, we have to know whether there's a problem, and logging, and that's part of the reason why we logging and monitoring was modified to logging and alerting, because we wanted to be a little stronger in that. Because monitoring could still be passive. Oh yeah, we monitor it, but we don't ever look at that dashboard or screen or anything like that, right? That's the second worst thing than not logging is logging, but never looking at it. And especially when you have log rollover and you're like, hey, 2 months ago, did we have a breach? Can't tell you. Log rolls over after 7 or 30 days or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it's just gone. Well, so logging and alerting always gets added, but.
Yeah. And I wanted to speak to that specifically because I've seen since the introduction in 2021, right? You know, of course, logging's my favorite topic, right? Like, so, you know, that's, you know, it is. I'm sorry, right? Like, because no one ever does it.
Don't apologize. Right? Like, so, we need people like you.
But since then, we've had more requests for like purple team style engagements to actually go and test logging and monitoring alerting infrastructure and work with the teams like the SOC to make sure that application security is being covered and not just network security. And so it has had an effect, at least in my world, for organizations. And it's been a positive thing because we are starting to pull back the curtain on what's going on and where those logs are going and who's paying attention to them. Now, startups, right? Like they struggle with this massively, right? Like small organizations, yeah. And they always will because mm-hmm. it's part of the security journey and security maturity. But larger organizations are definitely taking this into account. And I'm seeing active changes happen on the industry side. So
good. It's always good to hear those because that helps. Like there are days that like all I get is complaints about, well, this doesn't represent my view or my perspective, but they never use that. They're like, this isn't accurate. What they really mean in their world, they may not see it this way. And that's fine. That will happen. Like the number of application security professionals and the wide, massive variety of perspectives and experiences they have, I can't make a list of 10 things that they all resonate with. It's not possible. Yeah. And so that's why we work so hard to get as much of a broad spectrum and a representative sample as we possibly can, because there should be something in there that you encounter. But you may be in a super niche area that you don't see half of this stuff, and that's fine. But I can't make the list for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody, I mean, especially if it's awareness for a specific organization, it's going to look different, right?
Yeah, like
we customize 100%. Training all the time for organizations, because guess what? They're using a framework where, you know, injection is just not an issue. So we may like just skip over it or talk to it very quickly because it's just not a problem for them. Go ahead.
I would love organizations, and I've worked with some before, make your own top 10.
Yeah.
Go through your own data, go through your own logs, go through what you know. You should know your top 10. There's very little excuse to not know your top 10 in terms of what issues you have and you have to deal with. You should have training that aligns with that. You should have awareness. Your top 10 should change. Because otherwise you're not learning.
Yeah. Well, that's, that would be an interesting exercise, right? Even from like the organizations that I work with on a, you know, quarterly, annual basis, I could give you a list of the problems that they have and where they're like, what their top 10 looks like. Most of the time, it's probably not top 10. It's like top five. These are the issues we find year after year, quarter after quarter. Guess what? You know, we need to train over those, right? But it's not necessarily represented like that to the organization, but it could be incredibly effective to do that.
Well, even top three, right? Because there was... You know, top three, I've worked with organizations to do top three so that they have something that's tangible, right? Little small bites. So the goal was of the top three, one of these three can get taken out. Which one can we solve this year?
Yeah. Yeah. It's an effective way to go at it for sure. So we did have a question. Ken, did you want to drop that on the screen from Ron? And yep, was there a conversation about moving SSRF to injection over broken access control?
I feel like this is one of those things you were talking about, Brian, yeah. where you on Monday you have one feeling about it, and on Wednesday a different one. Yeah, I mean, for me, I could easily put this into injection as well. It's kind of a hard call. Was there a conversation about this?
I assume there was a little bit. In general, part of the reason why it didn't go into injection. So yes, SSRF there is an element of injection, right? Because you're giving the resource to the system that says, hey, go get this for me, pretty please. That'd be great. And by the way, you're authorized to do this, right? And so it does things on behalf of you. So if you look at the hierarchy for CWE, SSRF is a child of unintended proxy or intermediary, which is confused deputy. Mm-hmm. Confused deputy is an access control issue where it's confused on who it's doing things on behalf of, and it's trusting somebody it shouldn't be trusting. So this is SSRF is a great example of having multiple types of origins or multiple buckets you could put it in. Yeah, I could put SSRF into injection. But from my perspective, the way it's set up in CWEs and what more of the root cause is more on the confused deputy side, where it's doing things it shouldn't be doing for you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't know better.
Yeah. Yep. I go back and forth on it, and I would probably be looking, if I have access to the code, I'm going to be looking to see where I can classify that based on the code and what's being handled and what's happening there. So I could see classifying it under injection, under mm-hmm. some sort of, hey, guess what? We probably shouldn't be taking like full URLs here, right? Yeah. Or whatever it is, as opposed to, oh, we do need to go get that logo, right? And we do need a full URL. That's probably more of a broken access control. So yeah. My classification is going to be nuanced there, and it should be, right? You know, to that point.
Well, you want to have fun with it? We could also stick it in data and data or system and data integrity failures.
Yep.
Because it is also related to externally controlled reference to a resource from another sphere out of our control. Mm-hmm. And so now we have like data integrity issues potentially. So, I mean, I can, like I said, I can move things in buckets. I can do that.
We can do that all over the place. That's part of insecure design, right? Like you shouldn't be doing that anyway, right? So,
well, and that one was so unique because I had to work so hard to find CWEs that were more of the, it wasn't that you had a poor implementation. You didn't plan for this. Mm-hmm. The problem is the design didn't exist.
Yeah.
And when so you put together, like, yeah. Yeah. That's a hard category. We struggle with making sure that the things that are in there are truly related to, as best we can tell, related to design failures.
Yeah. Yep.
I wanted to point out that we only have 5 minutes left. So if yes, you,
I know. Yeah.
Just time check. I mean,
Just a time check. You have a question? I have one too, but we'll see where we get. Go ahead, Ken.
If you all want to do an encore one, that's fine. Like I have, like being buried in this for so many tens or hundreds of hours, like we can go for a long time. As long as you want to listen to different things that I've figured out or come up with, go for it. But
I love it.
Yeah. Well, we definitely should, because there is so much to cover here, and it's so mm-hmm. applicable to what we're doing on a daily basis, right? I know for Ken it is, for me it definitely is, and for most of our listeners this is day to day what we're getting into. Ken, go ahead with your question.
I mean it's not a really important one. I just was curious if there's anything this go around that just surprised you in general, that fell out, and just whether it's like, it's not necessarily even just the categories, it could be the process, it could be whatever. Just, is there anything this go around versus last that kind of was a surprise and a little different?
So I think really the big one for me was how strongly the community says software supply chain failure. like the resonation for that one was just like, because when we first talked about it, I was like, okay, sure, maybe some people are with that, and that's not something like I'm super close to. But I mean, I know of it and I deal with it looking through research and through news stories and other things, but I didn't realize, I underestimated how strong the reaction for it would be. And I expected more pushback for saying, hey, your CI/CD pipeline is now in the top 10. But I get people that are going, that's awesome. Thank you for putting it there. And I was like, okay, I that wasn't what I was expecting.
Well, if you look at our, topics over the last year, right? Like, that's not surprising. For me, that's not as surprising. Also dealing with clients and other things, because that's definitely been on the rise. But with that, like, do you want to talk about the LLM in the room and, right, like, where, like, what sort of pushback you're getting on that? That was my other question. And I know we don't have a lot of time, so we might have to, take that offline or do another one on it.
Yeah, I mean, I have so much we could talk about in terms of what's in the data, what's not in the data, things in the survey. I'd love to be able to continue the conversation. For AI and LLM, we had this discussion and we said we can't contribute to the hype.
Yeah.
We have to keep it at a core level. And two, a lot of it is, it's like the problem we had with Stack Overflow in the past. It's just massively magnified for a lot of the vibe coding and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we had some people say, hey, you need AI in there. I was like, I don't need to put AI in the top 10. There is a top 10 for LLMs, and that's fine. That's great. So, that's why we have like other top 10s where they can focus on particular areas. And from my perspective, like AI or not, these are still core critical things you need to deal with. You might get more of them from your vibe coding copilot or whoever's little tool that helps you out writing code. But it wasn't something that we wanted to validate with a ton of prominence in the top 10.
Yeah.
Because we're trying to keep it grounded.
Yeah. And I appreciate that, because it depends on what sort of like AI functionality we're talking about, like use of AI, right? Like all of these things still apply if the code was generated by AI, by a junior analyst, by a senior, engineer. If you have a flaw in your code, you have a flaw in your code. It doesn't matter where that provenance comes from. I get that. I just wonder like what other pushback that you would have received on it.
If we had done it.
Yeah.
I think we would have had heavy both directions. We would have had people go, oh, that's awesome, you put AI in it. We'd had other people go, what the heck, man?
Yeah.
Why'd you put AI in the top 10? Because we haven't historically done a lot with like delivery or source mechanisms, right? Because if we had had a top 10 category that said, hey, stop copying in cruddy code from Stack Overflow or Java Ranch or, whatever, Reddit, So if we had had that, sure, AI would have fit into that category. It's another source of another way of getting that kind of code. But like that, historically, we haven't done that. I didn't want to. And the other part is, of the 10 that are there, I can't justify displacing any of those things for something like this. Now, in 4 years, we may have this discussion again, and it may turn out differently. I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll let the data guide us on that. Well, I know, Brian, that you do have a hard stop. As much as, I'm sure we could keep going for at least another hour or two. We will schedule a follow-up. I'll have, our schedule reach out, we'll figure out another time, and we can target in on a couple of these that are more interesting, especially as we see adoption over the next month to 2 months. It'll be interesting to see how people respond and what they find useful and what they don't.
And I also want to talk a little bit about like the makeup of the industry and where we're going and how many new people versus veterans, because there's some fascinating demographics in the survey too. And I want to make sure we're taking care of people who are coming into the industry. because we have that responsibility because we need them.
Yeah, we do. And they need to understand what this actually represents. And some of this ties into the history. Like for us here, like on the podcast, talking about broken access control, we have so much baggage that we take into that, right? Like from IDOR and MFLAC and the years of having the separate items in the top 10 and where that actually fit. So somebody new in the industry isn't going to have that same baggage, which means they also won't have that same understanding. So how do we communicate that? How is that helpful? That'd be a good discussion to have.
Yeah, we can bring up the, I made the slide with the all 8 iterations of the top 10, because I think it'd be an interesting discussion to go back to 2003 and then work through and see how things have changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do a little bit of that history.
Let's do it. Well, yeah, we'll reach out and get that on the calendar. If you're listening, watch our schedule, watch LinkedIn, Slack, whatever, we will promote when Brian will be on again. And up until then, join Slack, ask your questions. Brian is in there. I know he will be responsive and is looking for feedback, especially on, since this is release candidate, right? Mm-hmm. Even though I'm sure it'll solidify here pretty quickly. So,
yeah, it's 2025. There's not too many days left in 2025.
Yep,
for better or worse.
And we're not going to 2026 on this. Like, let's put a bow on it. No. Move forward. No. Right. Yep.
Yes.
Cool. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your time. Thanks to the listeners. Any final thoughts before we close this out for today?
No, just thank you for the platform, for being able to, for me, one of the huge things about this is making sure people understand what goes into making it. It's not a whim. Like there's an insane amount of effort and concentration, because we want to make sure we're building a list that has integrity and relevance. And so this is not something that, we look fingers, stick it in the wind and go, okay, it feels like this today. There's mad methodology to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we appreciate know that about time. You.
Yes. Yeah.
And that
was that, Ken?
No, just we know that about you. We know that you're very detailed. We know that you you mean well, and I know that everybody else that worked with you on this, same thing. So just know it's a lot of work, and really appreciate your efforts, as Seth was saying there.
Yeah. And we appreciate you coming on, taking the time to share that across with us and with the listeners. We'll promote it out, and we will chat with you online as well.
Sounds good.
Thanks, all right, Brian.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Take care.